Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Joshua chapter 19. We're going to do the whole chapter, 51 verses, most of which is land survey. We're going to call this chapter Inheritance for Simeon, Zebulun, Issachar, Asher, Naphtali, Dan, and Joshua himself personally. 6. Tribes. Our context is this: a general description of the division of the 7 remaining tribes, the 7 tribes that were divided up at Shiloh as opposed to Gilgal. That happened in chapter 19, and the very end of that chapter, Benjamin got his inheritance. It was described, and so now we have, of the 7 that were to have their land allotted at Shiloh as opposed to Gilgal, of the 7 tribes that were left, we have 6 of them being allotted in chapter 19. So I'm not going to read you the land descriptions from verses 1 through 48. Bunch of names, most of which have been lost. Some have not been. Some are very well known. But it's not of any use to talk about individual cities in the boundary lines. I will mention in the boundary lines of the tribe, I will mention verse 9. It says, the inheritance of the sons of Simeon was taken from the portion of the sons of Judah, for the share of the sons of Judah was too large for them. Now, if you look at a map, the tribe of Judah runs all the way from Jerusalem south, all the way down the western side of the Dead Sea, all the way down past the tip of the Dead Sea, into the Negev, all the way down basically to the Wadi El Rish, down to Egypt. That's a heap of territory, much bigger than any other tribe. Now, in the middle of that large tract of land, there's a circle that goes around Beersheba at the northeast corner. If you look at it like a clock, it'd be about 1 o'clock. Hormah is 3 o'clock. Ziklag is 11 o'clock. Those three towns, of course, are mentioned in the history. I won't go over that at all, but just to mention that Simeon got some territory there in the middle. But even with all that territory, all the territory of Simeon carved out from the middle of Judah, Judah was still too big for Judah to tackle, to wipe the Canaanites out, so they needed help. The sons of Judah was too large for them, verse 9 says. The inheritance of the sons of Simeon was taken from the portion of the sons of Judah. And the first 8 verses talk about the boundaries of Simeon, and they mention that it was all taken from, in other words, carved out from, right there in the middle of Judah. Now we see in Judges chapter 1, verse 3, Judah said to his brother Simeon, come with me to my territory and let us fight against the Canaanites. I will also go with you to your territory. So Simeon went with him. So there we see an alliance with Judah and Simeon to conquer the Canaanites in that large tract of land there. Here's what Ellicott says, quote, in Judges 1 we read that Judah invoked the assistance of Simeon to complete the conquest of his inheritance and also assisted Simeon to conquer his. They worked together, in other words. This fact illustrates the character of the conquest of Canaan by Joshua and shows that when his work was done, something was still left for the individual tribes to do. Now, that's something we need to remember. The southern campaign of Joshua, the northern campaign of Joshua, conquered the land in general, wiped out the Canaanites militarily so they couldn't fight back and attack the Israelites. But that still doesn't mean that the individual tribes could just march into a city and live there. No, because the Canaanites would defend themselves if that happened. And so there had to be a lot of individual fighting being done even after Joshua's overall conquest had been completed. So in verse 9, when the text says that Judah had too much land, the inheritance for the share of the sons of Judah was too large for them, well, that meant that they had more cities than they could fill with people. They had more land than they could cultivate. So they needed help with Simeon to conquer cities so that they could cultivate the land around those cities. Now, there are 3 verses at the end of Joshua 19 that we can go over. Verse 49, when they finished apportioning the land for inheritance by its borders, the sons of Israel gave an inheritance in their midst to Joshua the son of Nun. In accordance with the command of the Lord, they gave him the city for which he asked, Timnath-Serah, in the hill country of Ephraim. So he built the city and settled in it. These are the inheritances which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the heads of the households of the tribes of the sons of Israel distributed by lot in Shiloh before the Lord at the doorway of the tent of meeting. So they finished dividing the land. So after everybody else got their land, Joshua got his last. Now, this shows how modest the man was. He received his portion last of old, all even though he was the oldest and greatest man in the nation. I say he's the oldest. I'm thinking about Caleb. I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head who's older, Joshua or Caleb. But let's put it this way. He's the big shot. He's the military leader. He got his land last of all. And as John Gill points out, Joshua didn't portion the land out to himself. The people gave it to him. It says in verse 50, they gave him the city for which he asked. He asked the people. Modesty, humble. He didn't say, this is mine. I'm the leader. I've got it. Now, Adam Clark says it is generally allowed that Timnath-Serah, the place that Joshua asked for, was a barren spot in a barren country. I don't know how Clark knows that. Let's read what Easton says about Timnath-Serah. It means remaining portion. In other words, the piece that's left over after all the allotment had been done. The city of Joshua in the hill country of Ephraim, the same as Timnath-Heres in Joshua 19:50 and Joshua 24:30. I don't know whether that's a translation issue or whether the city had two names, Timnath-Serah, Timnath-Heres, H-E-R-E-S. Now, here's a quote that Easton makes from a 19th century traveler in the area. Of all sites I have seen, says Lieutenant Colonel Conder, none is so striking as that of Joshua's home, surrounded as it is with deep valleys and wild, rugged hills. Opposite the town is a hill, on the northern side of which are many excavated sepulchres. Among these is the supposed tomb of Joshua, which is said to be the most striking monument in the country. It is a square chamber with five excavations in three of its sides, the central one forming a passage leading into a second chamber beyond. A great number of lamp niches cover the walls of the porch, upwards of 200 arranged in vertical rows. A single cavity with a niche for a lamp has been thought to be the resting place of the warrior chief of Israel. And this place is 10 miles southwest of Shechem. Well, you know, tourist spots. People love to mark the places. I mean, you can go to the Isle of Patmos today in Greece, and you can see where John wrote the book of Revelation. You could even see the actual stone table he used to write the book of Revelation. If you believe that, I've got some oceanfront property in Arizona I can show you. So I take that with a grain of salt. But anyway, this is where Joshua got his place. It's basically one city, and he built it. John Gill's editor says that Timnath-Serah means an abundant portion, not a remaining portion, but an abundant portion or a place in the sun, which sounds a little bit better than leftover portion. And he makes the interesting point. He says, what was really nice about this place is that not the place so much is what Joshua got to see before he died. He saw Israel serving God during his lifetime. Oh, wish I could die that way and say that I could see America serving God in my lifetime. It's probably not going to happen when I die. And Joshua also saw the promises of God fulfilled before his eyes. They conquered the land under his generalship. He was buried there at Timnath-Heres, on a mountain called Mount Gaash. Joshua 24:30, they buried him in his allotted territory at Timnath-Serah in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gaash. Judges 2:9, they buried him in the territory of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres, the same name as Timnath-Serah, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gaash. Two notices of Joshua's death in that place. Now, at the very end of the chapter, verse 51, we see that the inheritance is finished. They finished dividing the land. This is the end, the stamp of finality, if you will, in all this land surveying. And they mention there in verse 51, who was present? Eleazar the priest, Joshua, and the heads of the households of the tribes. That's the 12 princes, the 12 leaders, the 12 tribal leaders who are named back in Deuteronomy. So these 14 people are mentioned that are standing in Shiloh before the Lord. That means before the tent of meeting, at the doorway of the tent of meeting. It's before the Lord because the Lord's in the tent of meeting in the Holy of Holies. And the reason they went to all this trouble, the author of Joshua went to all the trouble of mentioning all these people and mentioning that they were standing before God, is this was God's doing. This was not a man-made division of the land. It was God's doing. And it was all done, back in verse 50, at the command of the Lord. Well, all that was, but in particular in verse 50, the division of Timnath-Serah to Joshua was done at the command of the Lord. Now, this is a little bit of a problem because there's no explicit place back in the Pentateuch where God ever spoke to Joshua and said, you're going to have Timnath-Serah. Well, here's one idea. Maybe God spoke to Joshua through the Urim and Thummim, which is the unknown. I always picture a white rock and a black rock held into the breastplate of the high priest. And they say, okay, if Joshua was going to get 10 Nasirah, we'll draw one of the rocks. And if it's a black rock, he doesn't get it. If he's a white rock, he does get it. And they go through with process of elimination. It could be. Or it could be, according to what God said to Moses when Hebron was given to Caleb, Joshua being associated with Caleb, the two favorable spies. We read in Joshua 14:6, then the sons of Judah drew near to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite, said to him, you know the word which the Lord spoke to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. So some people speculate that the word that God spoke to Caleb and Joshua, to you and me, to you, Joshua, and me, Caleb, in Kadesh Barnea, that's after the spying was done. Well, that's a nice speculation. Jameson Fawcett Brown says it was probably an unrecorded promise, similar which had to what had been made to Caleb in Joshua 14:6, which I just read to you. Now, I mentioned all the people that were there at the distribution at the end of it. Eleazar and Joshua were two. Eleazar was the religious head of Israel, and Joshua was the civil head. And those two sources of authority in Israel, of course, are mentioned all throughout the history of Israel. Here's what Jameson Fawcett Brown says about the finishing of the land distribution. So they finished dividing the land. This verse is the formal close of the section which narrates the history of the land distribution. And to stamp it with due importance, the names of the commissioners are repeated, as well as the spot where so memorable a transaction took place. Now, the names of the commissioners weren't all listed out, all 12 of them, but as a group, the 12 leaders of the tribes are mentioned, as well as Joshua and Eleazar. And so, ladies and gentlemen, we are finished with the distribution of land. And in our next chapter, Joshua 20, we'll talk about the six famous cities of refuge. That's only a 9-verse chapter. That'll be a short one. We'll see you then. Hope you enjoyed this audio.